In many ways, this next kingdom is the most significant. Vayikonen Yirmiyahu al Yoshiyahu. I think I say this every year before we do this kingdom. You know, we're so often impressed by history, and well, we should be. I think the standard trip in most eighth grade schools, the eighth graders, most schools, eighth graders, they go to Philadelphia and they marvel at history of the Liberty Bell, and it is very impressive. With the Liberty Bell, I believe that was from 248 years ago. Just to make a quick teshbon. When you think about Jewish history, 248 years ago, it's like, it's like nothing. Like, you know, impress me with something. But 250 years ago is like a drop in the hat. This was a kina written by Yirmiyahu himself. Well over 2,500 years ago, in commemoration of someone who was his close friend, and to some degree his partner, and that was the great sainted Melech Yoshiyahu. I don't spend too much time speaking about the story of Yoshiyahu. I imagine that it's very, very familiar to most of you. There's a brief description of it in Sefer Melachim, Melachim Beis, much longer in Divrei Hayamim. But just very briefly, Yoshiyahu was the king, and Yoshiyahu was the ultimate example that a person is never defined by their bloodlines. Anybody remember who Yoshiyahu's father was? Yoshiyahu's father was not so famous. Anybody? His father was Amon, not as famous. In general, if you look at the kings, so usually you had one king who was a king for many, many years, and then the son was usually like a nobody compared to the father, both as far as good and bad. And the younger son usually became assassinated, something. But Amon's father was Menashe. Right? Menashe was the worst king in Jewish history. Maybe tied with Achav. I mean, it's hard. There's if you want to make up a list of awful kings during the times of Bayis Rishon, you'll have a lot of competition. If you want to make a list of good kings, that's a very, very short list. Kings who were just led astray, depraved, supporters of Baal, often married the wrong women, which often was the downfall of many men, which is, that's the case in many situations. So the grandfather of Yoshiyahu was Menashe, who was the king for 55 years, Amon for 2 years. Yirmiyahu took over the kingship at the age of, I remember? At the age of 8. In fact, it's even mentioned in the Kina. The story of Yoshiyahu is really, really described in the Kina. The Kina is a story, so if you have the English, you can just sort of follow along. And he was sort of, again, a kid. He grew up in his father's home, his grandfather's home. Then in his later teens, I believe at the age of 18, they were doing a restoration of the Beis HaMikdash. And they found the Sefer Torah, which had come into disrepair. The Sefer Torah was opened to Parashas Kisavo, Arar Shelo Tokim as HaTorah. What's the rest of the Pasuk? Arar Shelo Lo Sokum. Choyakim, that curse the person that does not uphold this. And Yoshiyahu had an epiphany. He was inspired, and he decided to lead this mass tshuva movement. He was like the first Lubavitcher, the first Esha Toronik, the first person that was out in the field. And while we've had many successful Kiev workers since, probably no one as successful as Yoshiyahu. He was dogged, he was inspired, he led, he spoke everywhere, he just led this total tshuva movement throughout Eretz Yisrael. But as the story goes, and again you can sort of read it through the Kina, it was not complete. People were so attached to their Avodah Zarah that even when Yoshiyahu would send out messengers throughout Israel to sort of check people's homes, that used to be the style of the leaders and the Rabbanim. You'd send people out, the Mishnah says, to check whether people had klayim in their backyards. Like nowadays, I think the Rabbanim have good sense to not take such tactics. At least if they want to keep a job. But Yoshio was the king, and he sent out messengers throughout Israel, and he thought that people's homes were clean of Avodah Zarah. I'm sure people remember the creative ways of hiding the Avodah Zarah in their homes. And because Yoshiyahu was confident that the nation was totally redeemed, totally in the throes of tshuva, he allowed for the king of Egypt, Paro, to march through the territory against the advice of Yirmiyahu. Again, all this is based on the psukim. And we know that Yoshiyahu met an awful fate. As even as to read a few lines, Odenu Otsim Einav Begevyo Nochatzim. His eyes were closed, Begevyo Nochatzim. The arrows were going to his body, Chetz Achar Chetz, one dart, one arrow after another arrow, Morim Velochatzim. Just imagine the image of this great sainted Melech, his body just torn asunder by arrows, Tzadu V'samuhu K'matar Lachitzim. They ambushed him. By Yizuku Vo Shalosh Meos Chitzim, he died with Shalosh Meos Chitzim. Even if Yirmiyahu is taking a sort of poetic liberty, it's still imagine what type of death that is. I wanted to spend a moment or two speaking of why we have this Kina here. Kina for one person, a great person, but one person. There's really many answers given. The most obvious answer is that Yoshiyahu was the last great hope of the Jewish people. Yoshiyahu died some 20 years before Chorban Bayis. And from then on, especially with his grandson Yehoyachim, there was no hope. There was no turning back. The Avodah Zarah was so pernicious and so ubiquitous that the nation did not deserve to be saved. The Kadosh Baruch Hu made up his mind. And Yoshiyahu was the last hope. So therefore his death means a tremendous amount. But I always think, and this is something Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out, is that Yirmiyahu, the organizer of the keynotes, they want us to focus on the life of one person, and maybe even more so, the impact of one person. What one person can accomplish in this world. And therefore, the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Ches Mabez, that the death of the tzaddik is like the destruction of a whole Beis HaMikdash. Each person can accomplish and can create and can build and can add to the world. Each person in his own life. And for those of you who daven KBY, I've mentioned several times before, and I'm sure you're sick of me hearing this already. I remember about 3 or 4 years ago, I was in Wesley Kosher. And before I became a Rav, 12, 13 years ago, I was always worried, could you find enough material to have a drasha every week? It's like a real sense of nervousness. What are you going to speak about? And then when you go through life, you realize that you can be in Wesley Kosher for 5 minutes and you can have like 10 drushes. How this person's speaking to their kids and how this and how that, just how someone really waits in line. It's like, you know, life is filled of like 1,000 moments a day that are meaningful if you look at life through those glasses. Anyway, I was standing in line. Again, I mentioned this before. And there was somebody who was in line behind me. I remember I was buying a steak. That's what made the story even, I guess, more difficult. I was buying a steak and this marinade and that, and as usual, sort of not paying attention to the cost of whatever I was buying. And the guy behind me was with his children. This person used to be a Rebbe in a local yeshiva, and now he's been struggling to find a job, but he's just one of hundreds and hundreds of people just in Muncie who are like this. And he was paying with food stamps. And his children had taken maybe 6 yogurts and put it in. And he was looking at it, and he was counting it up. And he told his kids, no, maybe you have to put back these two and put back this milk. And So I got back in the car, and Huv was with me in the car, and I just started crying in the car at the thought of a person in front of their children telling their kids, we couldn't afford 6 yogurts, so put down that 2 yogurts, and in front of their kids. I was just devastated then, and still devastated now. I thought to myself, sitting in my car that night, that I need to go through my life and look back on my life at whatever age, in my 80s and 90s, Mirtz Hashem, and feel like I accomplished something major. I did something that mattered. I helped, hopefully on a large scale, people who were suffering. And I committed to myself that night to make a difference in the world. I went home, I grilled my steak, I went to sleep, I went to work the next day, and this life moved on. And whatever aspirations you had for somehow making a difference, it just sort of got buried under the footprints of life and work and living. So, you know, it reminds us of Yoshiyahu, a person who had every excuse to go in one direction and to do nothing with his life. How he woke up and how he created and a movement. One person. We mourn that, but in equal measure we celebrate that. We commit ourselves that rebuilding and binyan beis hamikdash and binyan ha'olam and yishuv eretz yisrael and anything meaningful in this world starts with a person that wants to make a difference. And that's part of our own commitment, our own song of rebuilding, our own song of Yeshua. So join me, please, in Kina Yud Aleph. Vayikonim Yom